and welcome back to the Buffalo Bread Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Roberts. Filling in for JJ today is our friend of the pod, not friend of the Bills, our noted Patriots expert, Brandon Bennett. JJ needed to take this week off, so we have Brandon filling in here. Brandon, as always, it is great to have you back on the pod. Nothing I enjoy more than talking Buffalo Bills football with a noted New England Patriots fan. How are you doing today?
Good. For the listeners, I'm surrounded by folding tables where I am currently. The folding tables are safe. I am protecting them, but I appreciate you having me back behind enemy lines here.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. I am telling you, you were born for Bills Mafia. If you are currently surrounded by folding tables and you have even the slightest urge to jump through them, you, sir, are rooting for the wrong team. And I will take that to my grave. So what we're going to do here, folks, given how odd the Buffalo Bills opening season schedule of games has been, with the Sunday 1 p.m. game, Thursday game, and now the Monday night game against Jacksonville, this is going to serve as a post game for the Finns and the Bills from Thursday night. And we're also, given that we have the opportunity with Brandon Bennett on the pod, we're going to talk a little bit about Thursday night football and the AFC East implications of the upcoming matchup between the surprisingly sprightly New England Patriots and the New York Jets. So then later on this week on our normal pod drop date of Saturday, you're going to get our pregame of the Monday night game between the Bills and the Jaguars. So one more early week pod drop, and then by the end of the week, we'll be back on our normal schedule of Saturday drops. Brandon, are you ready to enter the table-laden Thunderdome that is Buffalo Bills podcast talk?
Let's do it.
All right. So I'm actually fascinated, Brandon, by your take on what you saw. You are, again, a noted Patriots fan. Goes without saying. You've guest hosted on the pod on a multitude of occasions. But what we're seeing here early on in the season from the Buffalo Bills, I would think has to be a little bit surprising for casual fans of football in the AFC East, and then more hardcore fans like you and I, who are mired in the offseason data. We pay attention to the rumor mill. We pay attention to the trade and personnel churn mill. And no one thought the Buffalo Bills would get off to this type of start in the season in the way that they have, given the roster churn that they experienced. But on Thursday, and you could credit that it is Sean McDermott facing an opponent that he just knows how to game plan against very, very well. You could chalk it up to Josh Allen, who had a very efficient game, but not an outstanding game against the Miami Dolphins. But that being an opponent that he really does not sweat playing at this stage of his career, the emergence of James Cook, there are a ton of things, Brandon, that you could point to for the reason why the Bills dominated that game in the fashion that they did. Lots of rational reasons, but I don't think it necessarily takes away the surprise of seeing how dominant the Bills have been in the first 2 weeks with back-to-back 30-point games and a defensive effort on Thursday that was impressive, not just because of the quick turnaround and the injuries that they're facing, but all of that piled on to the fact that they were playing what has historically been over the last few years, a really, really explosive offense. Brandon, why don't you take us in through the lens of an AFC East competitor? What did you see in that game as a Patriots fan that has you potentially scared about playing the Bills in the future, but also maybe where you see some opportunities for the Patriots to move up now that it looks like the Dolphins may be looking at a decline this season?
Yeah, I think the interesting thing kind of the last 2 weeks is that the Bills won in week one in a very, very different fashion than the Bills won in week two. We saw in week one sort of what Bills fans have seen many, many times before, which is Josh Allen putting everything on his back and throwing his body out there for some insane, you know, highlight reel type plays. In week two with Miami, kind of a completely different game. I challenge you a little bit in terms of performance, but I don't think Josh had to overperform as he does sometimes in games. The defense, like you said, came up really big for the Bills in week two against Miami. Three interceptions, which I think, yeah, kind of sealed the deal for that one. Not super efficient in the passing game. 68% completion rate for Josh. Do you know what Tua's completion rate was before the concussion?
Before the concussion? He was somewhere around like 63% for that game, wasn't he?
68. So they're tied. Josh and Tua tied at 68%. How many rushing yards, or not rushing yards, passing yards between Tua and Josh? Do you know the difference?
There wasn't much of a difference that game.
Six, I mean, total yards of passing.
Yeah.
Difference.
I mean, Tua had a bunch more attempts than Josh too that game. Josh only chucked it up 19 times.
Yep. Yep. And then passing touchdowns for each quarterback.
Well, I know one and one. It was the first time in the last, it was the first time since Josh started playing the Dolphins, I think, that he hadn't thrown for two TDs.
Yeah.
That was a long-standing record. I will say this, though, about the efficiency metrics offensively for this game. The Bills still targeted 10 different pass catchers on 19 different attempts. Shakir and Kincaid were featured early and often, which I appreciated. This was a clear criticism that JJ and I had coming out of the Arizona game and that game plan, that they're your two playmakers, they're your yak guys, get them the ball. I loved the schemed up touches for them early on, and their catch rate for both of them was 100% on the targets that they received. Yeah. I mean, they were just vacuuming all the balls that they possibly could. And then James Cook, my friend, is a absolute efficiency maven at this point. He had 12 total touches for 95 total yards, three total TDs. His rush yards after contact, absolutely absurd. 68 rush yards came after contact out of his 70 plus total rush yards for that game. I mean, this offense, while not spectacular, to your point that you made earlier on, was finding a new way to win, was finding a different way to overcome some obstacles that the opposing defense was throwing at them. And I think for me, that's the most surprising part as a Bills fan, Brandon. And if I were an AFC East opponent, the most scary part is that despite the roster churn, the Bills seem to have a multitude of different ways, despite the turnover and despite the injury, to beat incoming teams. Now, granted, it's week two and you don't want to overrate, and the Bills have been here before. I will remind our listeners, and I'll remind you, Brandon, probably much to your delight, that the Bills were in this very same place last year. After the Miami Dolphins hung 70 on the Denver Broncos in week three, Buffalo lambasted them in week four, to the point where there were ESPN articles that were credibly written that said the Bills would go 15-2 for the rest of the season after that performance against the best offense we had ever seen in our time. They then lay an egg in London against Jacksonville, who coincidentally is the next opponent they'll face on Monday. And that leads them into a 3-5 stretch over the next 8 weeks, where people were literally calling for McDermott and Bean to be fired. So things can turn very quickly. But again, going back to your earlier point, the Bills seem to have multiple gears and multiple levers they can flip to win games this season. And that's something I don't think anybody expected based on the offseason they had.
Yeah, Cook is very special. As you know from our conversations, not on a podcast, Cook has been a target of mine in fantasy football for the last couple of years just because of how they work him into the passing game. Again, yards after contact, how many opportunities and touches he gets, his ability to, for the most part, stay very healthy with a very heavy workload. So, I fantasy wise, very pleased with James Cook's performance.
He is literally the reason why I think our friendship is so strong during football season. We have this one commonality that we can root for. You root for James Cook in fantasy, I root for him in real life. And that keeps our bonds of friendship and brotherhood very strong, sir. Very, very strong indeed. All right, let's dig into this game a little bit more. We've already talked a little bit about the offensive efficiency. And again, while not a spectacular game for the offense, one I think that to me at least, turned my head when I was really digging into some of the advanced metrics on this. Again, we talked about Kincaid, we talked about Shakir, their efficiency in catching the ball, the different targets that they were able to spread around the field, the use of James Cook in the run game. And here's the thing that really popped off the screen to me, Brandon. Cook's overall speed. He's always been a smooth accelerator. His first step, when he chooses to make his first step, is one of the quickest in the league. But JJ and I, earlier this season, had talked about, ironically, which running back room would you rather have, Miami or Buffalo's? And JJ convinced me to take Miami's because of the raw speed. Last season, James Cook didn't have a single run over 20 miles an hour, whereas Devon Achane had 9. And that raw speed makes an absolute difference in the game, regardless of how good your run scheme is. But Brandon, James Cook hit 20 miles an hour on a carry this week, and that is speed I have not seen from him yet. It was that long touchdown run he had where Poyer took the bad angle and ended up chasing him down the field. Hit 21 miles an hour on that run, one of the fastest runs here early in this season for a running back carry. Brandon, if Cook's speed continues to develop and continues to grow in that way, to me, that's a scary element for two reasons. The traditional run game, which Brady is scheming up so well, but also what it means for him as a pass catcher out of the backfield, because he leaks out so effortlessly on a lot of these schemed up touches from Brady in the pass game. Case in point, that 4th-and-3 that he scampered in the end zone for a touchdown. No one around him. Great play scheming by Brady, but you add that scheming to just raw speed and athletic ability, there's not a lot of defenses that are going to touch that. So let me ask you, as a fantasy owner of James Cook, how excited are you that it looks like he is in fact faster than he was last season?
Yeah, very exciting. I mean, he's 198 yards on the season. And so if he keeps that pace, it's going to be phenomenal for you all as Bills fans, but also for me as a fantasy manager of James Cook. It's very exciting. Achane's exciting too. And, he had a lot of yards in that game as well. I think this is going to be a strong year for James Cook, which you had to have known kind of going into it with so many new faces in that offense. We haven't really seen Keon Coleman get super involved yet. And so, I think time will tell, but the team was going to have to rely on the returner who came back this season in James Cook. And he's really leading the way. So.
Yeah, and it's not like the Dolphins, Brandon, weren't trying to stop him. Last season, James Cook only faced a stacked box, which is eight or more guys in the box, about 20% of the time. Against Miami, that almost doubled. 36% of the run looks he faced were against a stacked box, and there was nothing Miami could do to stop him. In those particular situations, he had a success rate of 50.4%. And it, overall yards per carry against the stack box, 7.1 yards a carry. Now, a lot of that is due to James Cook, but also a shout out to the offensive line that I feel like as we progress here, I become more and more wrong about in my early offseason takes that the Bills had maybe their biggest strength from last season. They had decimated it by choice. And Aaron Cromer, we trust, my friend. Like the way this offensive line is playing, the guard pull schemes that they're running, duo, dart, all of that stuff that Joe Brady is getting into his bag with is effective almost every single time. And when I look at the AFC East, because you guys starts with winning your division, and even when I look beyond at a team like Cincinnati, who people think is going to be an AFC contender, Kansas City, no one is built to stop the run. And it's a super bad sign if the Bills are doing this against stacked boxes. Because that means eventually, as this offense continues to grow and mesh, they're going to start taking some of those open field shots down the field and really bring back the deep ball game here. So there are layers that I look forward to seeing this Bills offense add on, but I am hesitant to say for sure that the Bills are in the catbird seat at this point in the AFC East because there's still a lot of football to play. And we've been here as Bills fans before. But this is all very optimistic. Brandon, you brought up Achane, which I think is a great opportunity to switch over to the defensive side of the ball, which I think you and I can both agree that's where the Bills won this game. A Jamarcus Ingram coming out party. Credit to Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott. They just seem to find these undrafted free agents, these late round draft picks, Cam Lewis being another one in the secondary that they develop over and over and over again. It has really become cornerback university at Buffalo. Add to the fact that Bernard goes down in this game and you get Baylon Specter coming in, playing meaningful snaps and playing meaningful football against a really good offense and really locking down his area of the field. And I don't think you could be happier with what you saw from the depth pieces on this defense. But listen, man, this thing was won and lost in the trenches. I mentioned that stacked box metric to you, Brandon. What type of, now we all know Devon Achane is going to run the ball. We know Miami wants to run the ball to set up what they want to do downfield. Knowing this, and knowing James Cook faced a stacked box on 36% of his rushes, what do you think is the percentage of stacked boxes that the Buffalo Bills threw at Devon Achane?
You're really testing me here. 45?
9%.
Okay.
9%. Even without Taron Johnson, even after Terrell Bernard went down, this was a team that was committed to too high coverage on almost every snap, on 72% of their total snap share. The Buffalo Bills were in too high coverage. They welcomed the run. And while the total yardage for Achane looked great at the end of the game, his advanced metrics weren't that great. Not only did he fail to really take advantage of these light boxes, his rush yards over expected per attempt were a minus 1.2 yards. He only had a success rate, Brandon, of 40%. Again, against light boxes where the Buffalo Bills were playing their backup linebackers, a backup nickel corner in their base nickel package, and still were able to really mitigate it, right? So basically, on EPA per rush, every time Achane touched the ball in a traditional run, it was a win for the Buffalo Bills in the overall metric because it was chewing up clock. Tua could never get into a rhythm in the passing game because the Bills were giving him so many tasty looks in the run game. And there was never any fluidity and there was never any consistency to that offensive game. Add to the fact that the Bills were just dropping everybody into coverage. Their blitz rate against Tua, only 4.7%. They dropped everybody back and they were like, we're going to close down these anticipatory windows and best of luck to you in trying to figure that out. I don't often say this about McDermott and Brandon. I don't think Bills fans often say it about McDermott, but he outcoached Mike McDaniel in that game. The scheme him and Babich ran against this vaunted Miami Dolphins offense was just supremely tailored to all of the weaknesses that this Miami Dolphins team brings to bear. And it was a masterclass. It was an absolute masterclass. What did you think from your view?
Yeah. Do you think there's an element of the players coming into this game with just sort of pre-built confidence because of the record that they have against Miami since Sean McDermott came in? The number I'm seeing is 14 wins to 2 losses against Miami. So coming in, is it already the expectation that the Bills are going to walk away with a win because they've done it so many times and then the players get kind of juiced from that?
That's a great question. I mean, that kind of success, you don't see divisional records like that often. Ironically, your Pats hold one over the Bills in the Tom Brady era. I think he was like, what, 36-3 against the Bills in his career? Frick Tom Brady. Hate that guy. Anyway, glad he sucks at announcing football right now. That gives me hope that he is, in fact, human. But, I mean, complacency can kind of set in there. I do think that's a factor, but you also got to keep in mind like what Flores was doing when McDermott first took over the team, what Flores was doing in Miami versus what McDaniel is doing. Two very, very different styles of coaching, two very different schemes offensively and defensively. To be able to have that kind of success no matter who the coach is, no matter who the quarterback is. I think confidence plays a role, but I think coaching and scheme plays even more of a role. And to me, that was on full display in this game for sure.
Yeah, the other, you know, you brought up the Patriots dynasty. Belichick was 38-11 against the Jets. And I just remember,
Owned divisional opponents.
Yeah.
Right. But this is what great teams are supposed to do. They're supposed to own the people they play the most. That familiarity should breed some sort of consistency of success. So, I mean, again, it was on display for your Patriots during their dynastic run. But here the Bills also, this run that they've had against Miami, it's not just McDaniel. Again, it extends into the Flores era as well. I mean, is really astounding. Now, that being said, the Pats tend to play them closer. I will never forget that the sole fourth quarter comeback that Mac Jones ever led against any football team was against the Buffalo Bills last season on that ridiculous touchdown throw to Mike Gesicki, who is my least favorite tight end in the league, Mr. Horrible Gritty himself, right? So, but this is the thing, right? As Bills fans, we sit here elated after moments like this being like the AFC East runs through us, but the Jets and the Patriots play us a lot closer than the Dolphins do. So that overarching dominance throughout the division that you guys displayed in your dynasty is still something the Buffalo Bills are not yet fully on that level. And I don't know that they're going to get there with the roster construction and the injuries they've faced this season, especially playing you guys so late. If we're this beat up now in week two, we don't play you until our first game against you guys is December 22nd. We get you guys two out of the last 3 weeks of the season, week 16 and week 18. Like, maybe Milano's back by then, maybe Johnson's back by then, or what's more likely to happen is the Bills are going to be even more beat up and have to reach further into their roster to find answers, right? But that's all stuff for down the road, man, because right now, I think Bills fans, we want to live in the elation and we want to hope that what happened last season after we trounced Miami in our first meeting doesn't ultimately repeat itself with a game against Jacksonville coming up on Monday. So, Brandon, I want to get your take here as an overall AFC East fan. This was, I think, in a lot of ways, a devastating loss for Miami, and I don't think it can be understated. But a lot of preseason prognostication had the Miami Dolphins and the New York Jets battling it out for first place in the AFC East with the assumption that the Patriots would be bad and the Bills, because of the roster churn, would be abdicating the throne after four straight division titles. But after 2 weeks, it looks like the Jets are still finding their way. It looks like Miami is headed for a season from hell, especially now with Tua going on IR. So, which means he will not be eligible to play for the next 4 weeks at minimum. So this opens the door just a creak for your New England Patriots. But as an AFC East fan, what do you think this means for Miami? And what do you think it means for a potential early ascendance for your beloved New England Patriots?
Yeah, so we're seeing this really interesting thing in the NFL right now where every month there's a newest, highest paid quarterback in the league, it seems like, with the recent Dak Prescott bag of money. And let's not even talk about the amount of money that Daniel Jones is raking in for whatever reason. It is just so difficult to find a quality week in, week out quarterback that's reliable. So teams are willing to go broke to pay for the right guy. And as it pertains to Miami, Tua was their guy, right? They put all their chips in that basket, and Skylar Thompson's not going to get it done. Still TBD as to whether or not they are going to sign somebody to come in, a veteran. There's been talk about Tom Brady coming out of retirement, and You know,
it all comes back to Brady.
It's just the rumor. Well, it's got to, especially if Chris Collinsworth is calling the games. Some of that's conjecture, right? All the calls for Tua to retire, that is, you know, we've seen this before. So I don't think, you know, Tua's done for the season. I think he'll get cleared after concussion protocol and then we'll see him back out there. But and then we'll see what happens from there, what the recovery looks like, if he's the same when he comes back. But it's going to be rough for them with Skylar Thompson under center. I feel bad for stars like Tyreek Hill and Achan and, you know, Waddle and all that sort of stuff, just because they're going to have a rough time out there. So,
yeah, and it's hard to see, Brandon, what their path forward is. Let's say, and listen, there's been plenty of conjecture. There's been plenty of, like, sort of values casting. People think, you know, what people think about Tua's future and what he should do. I don't want to get into that. That's a decision that is between him and his family. And I hope he is getting the right counsel and he is going to ultimately make the right decision about what's best for him and his. But until that gets resolved, you've got a big cap number tied up in Tua. You just re-upped Jalen Ramsey. You just re-upped Tyreek Hill. And you just re-signed Jalen Waddle to his big second contract. There are significant cap commitments on the offensive side of this ball. And on the defensive side, you've got decisions you got to make about Javon Holland, Jalen Phillips. You wonder what type of room, given how much money the Dolphins have committed to a quarterback and two wide receivers, how much room they're going to have to really improve this team should Tua come back. Because again, he is the foundation that this offense rests on. Mike McDaniel went to bat for him in these contract negotiations and was like, Tua is my guy. This offense runs the way that it runs because of him. But here we are, and under Mike McDaniel and Tua Tagovailoa, the Miami Dolphins are now 1-11 against teams with a winning record. And they are only averaging 15 points a game this season at home. Their first two games at home, where last season that number was nearly double at 29.2. Now Tua going on the IR, all of these cap commitments. I think if you're a Dolphins fan, once you figure out the domino that is to fall with Tua's future, you really do need to ask yourself, where and how does this roster improve? It hasn't been through the draft because of the limited amount of draft picks that the Dolphins have had because of that tampering scheme with the aforementioned Tom Brady. It all comes back to Tom, still ruining AFC East teams, even in retirement at this point. It's unbelievable. But you got to wonder if last season wasn't the season they could have stole one from the Bills, stolen a division title, gotten a home game, as opposed to having to go on the road in -6 degree weather in Kansas City. Last year, if you're a Dolphins fan, really does begin to feel in hindsight like the year where the Dolphins could have kind of gotten their shot, gotten their home game, their division title, and maybe a deeper than expected run into the postseason. It feels at this point, again, we got, what, 16 more weeks of football here, but it feels like, Brandon, the Dolphins missed their shot.
Yeah, not their year.
Yeah, without a doubt. Let me tell you, Brandon, whose year it might be. And I would loathe this if this was actually the case. Your New England Patriots. I want to wrap here by doing something we don't often do outside of a Bills game. I want to do a pregame chat with you about Thursday night football, Brandon. Your New England Patriots against the New York Jets. Brandon, I want to kick it off by this. I've got a ton of metrics, a ton of stats, and some burning questions I want to ask you. But first and foremost, are the Patriots good? Take it away.
The Patriots are amazing. No, I don't think they're very good. I think we are seeing the new coach bump that teams get when there's a new coach. We've talked about this before. We saw it in Vegas last season, in the middle of the season. For all intents and purposes, they looked horrific. They got a new coach. Suddenly, guys are willing to run through a brick wall for this guy. And I think that's what we're seeing in New England. Definitely an upset win in week one against Cincinnati. Cincy does not look good. Ja'Marr Chase is very clearly unhappy there, which I think is a big source of their problems in the locker room. That's translating to stuff on the field. And then we have this Seahawks game. It was a close one, went to overtime, you know, and the Patriots couldn't figure it out. Huge game by Hunter Henry. He looked fantastic. I think if the Patriots are going to...
He's your best pass catcher by a lot.
100%. Yeah. You know, and I made a comment earlier about Keon Coleman on the Bills not being super involved. I don't know what's going on, but Pop Douglas has not been super involved in the passing game for New England. So, you know, Ramondre has been doing a lot. He looks excellent. I'd be actually curious if we were to do a stat comparison between Ramondre Stevenson and your James Cook. Because I think, you know, they're comparable in terms of last 2 weeks for the season. But yeah, I mean, they're going to have to get the rookie Jalen Polk involved. They're going to have to get Pop Douglas involved. They're going to have to keep beating Hunter Henry the ball. And all of those were short passes for the most part, right up the middle. And a lot of efficiency there. But to your original question, I don't think the Patriots are good. I don't think this is a winning season. I think they're probably looking at 7 wins. I think that's the ceiling. So,
and yet, based on point differential, if the season were to end today, the New England Patriots would be the 6th seed in the AFC playoffs. So there is always hope, my friend. There is always hope. But let's break this down, because listen, is a Bills fan base, Bills Mafia, we have a keen interest in this game. Everyone has been saying the Jets and the Dolphins are two top opponents in challenging for the crown of the AFC East. And the Jets, you know, have looked different this season. It's not just because they have a competent QB under center in Aaron Rodgers, but the defenses look different here and in a bad way. Now, granted, that was a rough matchup to catch San Francisco week one in San Francisco, the way that they caught them. But there were some troubling trends, I think, with this New York defense, Brandon, that JJ and I talked about in the preseason, most specifically around their pass rush. Now, here's where I think you all have an opportunity. Your offensive line, by every metric, is still not great in New England. It's 31st in pressure rate allowed. It's 32nd in pass block win rate. These are not vast improvements over last year, and you guys are still really banged up. You're just searching for depth literally off the street for your offensive line, which is why when you're given the opportunity, you guys are going to the quick game so much. The problem is Brissett doesn't have a lot of time to throw normally. He's faced a pressure rate of 42% this season. So almost half his dropbacks, he is almost immediately under pressure. So he's trying to buy as much time as he can. But the Jets, Brandon, their defensive line, this is a team that rushes 4, drops 7 pretty consistently. They're only 25th in pass rush win rate. If there were a get right game for your offensive line, and I hesitate to go on record with this, but I think I'm going to, it might be this game. Jermaine Johnson for the New York Jets, now lost for the season. They've got Will McDonald, who's been doing some things for them off the edge. But all of a sudden, a really deep defensive line unit that was the pride and the foundation of this New York defense now looks really, really depleted. And frankly, that couldn't come at a better time for you guys, coming off of a short week after a really rough road game. Now, you guys are at home for this one too, aren't you? This is a home game in New England on Thursday?
That sounds right, yep.
Okay, I can't remember. I'll check and I'll put the correct thing in the show notes. But regardless, home or road, this could be a game where you guys get to figure some stuff out in both the quick pass game and in the run game too. Brandon, what are some of your keys to victory here if your New England Patriots are going to pull it out on Thursday night?
I think Ramondre Stevenson's going to have another heavy workload in that game. I think the Jets have shown that you can run against them. They you know, still have a very strong corner, the Jets do. So certainly, yeah, questions about the passing game. It's really hard to say. I think the Patriots have an opportunity to be 2-1. So yeah, we'll see. I do think the Patriots are at the New Jersey Jets.
Yep. It's a road game. Road game. I just looked it up. So yeah, I agree. I think you guys are going to want to run the ball. They've been trying to work the quick game with Brissett. Surprising advanced metric. In quick game efficiency, you guys are number 3 in the league after 2 weeks. The problem is there's not a great amount of protection for Brissett, so he isn't often able to get it out in under 2.5 seconds. I think his total time to throw this season is over 3 seconds, but it's usually because he's running for his life, trying to extend the play. But if you guys can give him some protection, I actually think your Pop Douglas comment from earlier is because, listen, Douglas is a speedster, but he's not a great route runner still. He needs time to get separation and get open. I just think his lack of involvement is because they don't trust him over the middle, and the protection isn't holding up long enough for them to use him in the deep passing game. That could potentially change if you guys are going up against a depleted defensive unit in New Jersey. So, Brandon, let me start with this, because I got some burning questions that I want to get to about your squad for you. But before we get to that, who do you got on Thursday? Pats or Jets, and why?
I have to take the Patriots. I don't think Aaron Rodgers is the same quarterback that he was pre-injury. I don't think he's been the same for a long time. I think the best years are behind him, and at this point, he's just cashing checks. This is Breece Hall versus Ramondre Stevenson, not Jacoby Brissett versus Aaron Rodgers. And so there's going to be a lot of checkdowns to the running back position. Probably a back and forth game. I don't see it being super high scoring. So I'll say Patriots 24, Jets 21.
Patriots 24, Jets 21. I like that. Yeah, these Thursday night games are always super weird, but I agree with you. I think that running game travels. And listen, I don't know if it's because of their own offensive line deficiencies, despite the improvements they made, or if it's because of Rodgers' general health right now as he recovers from his Achilles tear. But dude, they are dialing up the quick game in New York like it's nobody's business. Rodgers' time to throw this season is very Tua-like. It's 2.26 seconds. They do not want him taking hits in the pocket for obvious reasons. And Nathaniel Hackett is scheming up a lot of quick stuff to try to get the ball out of Rodgers' hands as soon as possible after the snap. I mean, Garrett Wilson, Brandon, has 10 receptions this year. 8 of them have come on a time to throw of under 2.5 seconds.
Mm.
That's great for the health of Rodgers, but you've got a really dynamic weapon in Wilson that you're really just using as a check down Charlie right now. His average depth of target is just under 7 yards per catch. I mean, it almost feels like an underutilization of Wilson and his skill set to have him inserted into the game plan in this way. But I don't think the Jets have a choice right now based on what they're giving a quarterback. Now, that may change. Rodgers may get healthier as the season goes on, may get more comfortable. We got to remember he didn't play football for almost a calendar year. But right now, it looks like the Jets want to do anything but let Rodgers spend time in the pocket and look for a deep shot down the field.
Yeah. Bring back the game against Seattle this past weekend. The backup running back for Seattle, Zach Charbonnet, he had like 100 rushing yards or something like that. And so Patriots and Jets have shown that their defenses can be run on. So there's going to be a lot of rushing yards this game. So
old fashioned slobber knocker on Thursday night. That's what we want to see. But you got the Pats pulling it out 24-21. All right. You are now on the internet forever with that take. We'll see if it comes back to haunt you. Trust me, it almost always does. Yeah. All right. So, Brandon, before I let you go, I got a couple of quick hit questions I want to get to you, because I don't know when we're going to be back on the pod next. So we have mentioned kind of the offensive scheme that New England is running out there. And there's a lot of deficiencies on this roster, but there have been a lot of fans clamoring to sit Brissett because of the lack of explosives in the New England offense and bring in the prince who was promised, Drake May, into the starting fold sooner rather than later. What do you need to see, Brandon, in order for Brissett to keep May on the sideline on Thursday?
First of all, love the Game of Thrones reference. Prince that was promised. That's a good one. I don't think it matters. The O-line is not good enough. Brissett just needs to be healthy. As long as Brissett stays healthy, I think he's going to keep starting games. I think the plan is for Drake May to continue learning, right? I said in a previous episode of this pod that I didn't think we'd see Drake May before week 8. So as long as Brissett continues to scramble and stay out of harm's way, get the ball quickly out of his hands, I think the job is going to continue to be his, barring, again, absolute disaster. So, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. I agree with you. The rookie QBs that are currently starting, Bo Nix, Jane Daniels, Caleb Williams, have exactly as many passing touchdowns combined as Drake May has sitting, and that is 0. And this is always an ongoing debate with rookie QBs at this point in the season. Do you start them and give them the real game development, or do you sit them and allow them to learn? And I think we've seen success going both ways. But I think CJ Stroud and his coming out party last season as a rookie really kind of muddied the view of what rookie QB success really looks like. Steven Ruiz, who is one of my absolute favorite quarterback commentators, quarterback evaluators, works for The Ringer. Highly recommend looking at his QB rankings on a weekly basis. You know, he was like, rookie quarterbacks by QBR are basically on average the 26th best quarterback in the league every season when it all is said and done. I think that is an argument exactly in favor of what the Patriots are doing, which is sitting Drake May, keeping the wear and tear off of his body, allowing him to learn the game as they continue to build the roster in the next couple of seasons around him. Now, I wouldn't advocate for sitting him beyond this year because I think you want to get this party started while he is still on that rookie deal. So don't Jordan love this guy. But I think letting him sit, as opposed to putting him in a situation where you know he's not going to be successful, I think is absolutely the right way to go. All right. My final question for you, and you've kind of alluded to this already, but you guys were very competitive against two projected playoff teams in your first two games. You beat Cincinnati, who is now 0-2 on the season after losing to Kansas City, and you came close in a really, really kind of physical game against an up-and-coming Seattle team that was getting great QB play out of Geno Smith, has a much-improved defensive line, and you guys put up a fight in that game too. What do you think, Brandon, is motivating your guys' roster right now, as depleted as it is from an injury standpoint on the offensive line? What's motivating this roster to play with this level of toughness?
Yeah, I think I mentioned it earlier, but I think it's that new head coach boon that they're getting. Brissett he's been around the league for a while, so I do think he is, you know, leading the locker room in that way. I think it's the players that are playing for each other and trying to bring back, I think, some of the Patriots name that's kind of been tarnished over the last couple of years. It's been embarrassing, right? It's been bad. The drop off.
I don't know what you're talking about. I've loved it. I think it's been great. You guys just keep doing this.
You know, I think the team, the identity of the team needs to prove that they can win without Tom Brady. I think they're trying to figure that out. So that is, you know, how sustainable that is, TBD, right? As injuries happen, I think we're on our third string left tackle right now. So
you are correct.
Yeah. And if Brissett gets hurt and Drake May gets forced in early, I think it gets ugly. from that point. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, at least right now, you guys got a lot of reasons to be optimistic. It's been a better than expected start for you all. And listen, you have a chance to set the New Jersey Jets at 1-2 to start the season and really assert yourself with an early season lead over a divisional rival. So listen, man, best of luck on Thursday. I don't mind rooting for you guys when you don't play against the Bills and when you can hurt one of our other divisional rivals. So I'll be watching that game with great interest. Brandon, listen, man, thank you for filling in today. I know it's not easy to come on the pod with short notice, but as always, you have done an absolutely sterling, sparkling job, and we really appreciate it.
Well, I'd like to try something, if you're open to it. It's something I'm going to call a 10-second take, and I'm going to give you 10 seconds to give me a take, all right?
Oh, dear God. Okay. Go.
Here's the first one. Is Sam Darnold good? You have 10 seconds.
He's not good. No. But he is in a great situation. He's always had the physical tools to be a really good QB. He's never had the coaching. I think he's ingrained too many bad habits to be consistently good.
Next one. You have 10 seconds. Bryce Young is going to be benched for the great Andy Dalton. Can Carolina win games with Andy Dalton?
Yes. Andy Dalton's won games in this league. Andy Dalton and Bryce Young are not the reason why that team will win or lose. It's the rest of that roster and the poor construction and personnel and coaching turnover they've seen.
Okay. This is your last 10-second take. The end of the Chiefs-Cincinnati game ended with a very controversial, yet again, pass interference call in favor of the Chiefs, who then responded by winning the game. What's going on?
We all know what's going on. The script is the Chiefs will three-peat this season because this is what the NFL wants. No, I mean, listen, Mahomes and the Chiefs, they're Jordan. Jordan, by the end of his career, got all the calls because he was the GOAT. Same thing is happening to the Chiefs. Is it great? No. Is it fair that it's on display every single Sunday on nationally televised games? No. But it's a credibility that they've earned by being as good as they are for as long as they are. If somebody doesn't like it, beat them. That's all I got to say.
Thank you so much, Dan, for your 10-second takes. And thank you again for having me back on the pod.
Not a problem. And thank you for all of you listening at home. Like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Soon to come, YouTube, Apple, and Spotify. And as always, go Bills.